Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the More Phenomenal Hockey Show Playoff Preview Edition. As you can tell, there's three of us on screen. So first off, I'd like to introduce to my, I guess, left or right, I don't know, I'm looking at a monitor, our good friend Ted Starkey from Hockey Hot Stove. How you doing, Ted?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. I might need a hug later. We'll talk about it later, though.
Love the hugs.
I love the hugs. Love the hugs. And as you can tell below me, he is returning for the first time since December, I believe.
Yeah.
It's been a while. It is everyone's favorite hockey playing actor, Mr. Toru Masamune. Toru, welcome back, buddy. We have missed you.
Well, it's good to be back. Good to be back. So,
yeah.
He's got a much better background than us, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. I've been working hard and I've been busy. I've been under pressure, man. That's why I haven't been showing up for these podcasts.
Hey,
you don't know how hard my life is. You have no idea.
So with that, real quick, before we hop into the thing, the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHD Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both TXHDHockey.com and in the YouTube show description to get a $20 discount on Oats Overnight today. Because everyone loves getting money off on things. So go get some Oats Overnight. So we're going to hop into this. Toru is actually going to be with us for the beginning part of this episode, and you'll see him again at the end of the episode when we do playoff predictions. So we're going to hop right into it because obviously the Washington Capitals are out of the playoffs. All the questions are surrounding Alex Ovechkin. I'm going to hand it off to you, Ted, because I actually have not had the time to sit down and watch all of the exit interviews yet. For those who know why, it's because I'm out doing Instacart for like 8 to 12 hours a day every day doing the grind. Talk about living a hard life. So I've been able to watch it, but you have a little bit better perspective because you're able to watch everything. Give us a breakdown on Ovechkin and some of the comments that he made in his exit interview.
I mean, basically, over the weekend, he had the farewell, put it in quotes, tour in Pittsburgh and at home. I think he kind of played along for a bit, but like when the Penguins offered to shake his hand at the end of the game, he waved them off, which was, I think, a kind of a good indication, because if you remember right, last year with Marc-Andre Fleury in Minnesota, he led a handshake, and then with Kopitar in Los Angeles, did the same thing. But, you know, given the same courtesy, he turned it down. After the game on Tuesday in Columbus, was basically like, well, I hope it's not my last game. And, you know, pretty much reinforced that yesterday, basically saying, you know, he hoped it's not his last game. He wants to see what the Capitals do before deciding to come back. And I think that's where we are. I think he's a smart guy. He knows he can give some leverage into what he does and the leverage. I think, you know, what came out of the Caps breakdown today is they were not happy with what happened during the deadline when they sold off John Carlson at the Ducks and nicked out to Vegas. Yeah. So I think there was a upset locker room. You know, they said they had a meeting basically to try to right the ship. They almost made the playoffs, as Michael and I were discussing off camera. Basically, you know, had they turned around one game in Philadelphia, they would be in the playoffs and the Flyers would not. So, I mean, I wrote today for Hockey Hot Stove, basically said, I think he put the ball in Washington's court. I mean, he wants to see improvement with the team for next year. He wants to see a decent contract. I mean, it's probably going to be less of a team friendly deal than they would have had probably had they not made the deals at the deadline. So, but I mean, I think it's just up to them. I mean, you know, if the Capitals, I would presume the Capitals follow through with doing what he would like them to do. If they don't, I mean, there's possibility he could end up with another NHL team or go back to the KHL, but I would say, 90% chance he's coming back to Washington, probably 5% to another NHL team and 4% to go back to the K. And I think 1% he hangs them up. But I mean, he played all 82 games. He's one of only three Caps at age, he's going to be 41 in September. So I think that, I think the odds are he's coming back. I mean, you look at all the goal scorers for unrestricted free agents, he's tied with ex-Cap Anthony Mantha for the lead with 32. And in a year where UFAs are going to be well compensated just because there's so few good ones on the market, he could certainly command a pretty good short-term deal somewhere else. So, but I think eventually, I think this may get bumped up to Caps ownership rather than just general manager Chris Patrick, and I think they get a deal done.
Yeah, and one thing I want to bring up, and you and I were talking about this off air, was they brought in Timothy Liljegren, who barely played. They brought in David Kampf, who played, I think, what, two games
Yeah.
the entire time.
He had
They
visa
were,
issues in his.
well, visa issues, and then the birth of his child, I mean, obviously
Right.
played a factor. But these were guys who, when they got picked up, were kind of expected to pick up some slack, I guess, as depth pieces, and they really didn't do much of anything. And one of the other things that we talked about was, especially when Pierre-Luc Dubois was injured and missed 47 games, that was an opportunity to really bring up guys like Ivan Merezhchenko and let him play. Ilya Protas, let him like play meaningful minutes. I mean, we end up seeing what happened when Ilya Protas did come up. He got paired up with his brother Alexei and Tom Wilson, and they became the hunk of meat line. Copyright trademark pending, on the name of that line. I mean, 700 pounds, that's a lot of meat, everybody. Come on now. But so, by the way, last episode, Zach Phillips from The Sheet with Jeff Merrick actually said the best idea for a t-shirt option for that line for the hunk of meat. So we may have to make that happen next season if it happens. But the thing is, though, is that like when we saw Merezhchenko come in and replace Ethan Frank, the team got better. They still hit some speed bumps like that game in Philly that you talked about. They started to play better with Merezhchenko in the lineup. When Ilya, when actually you can go to Cole Hudson. When Cole Hudson came into the lineup, you can see that the offensive output from the defense was starting to get better in that sense as well. The puck movement was getting better. And then you bring up Ilya Protas, granted for like the last week of the season, you can instantly tell that they got better. They, playmaking was a lot more better for the team. So it's like makes you question why weren't these guys, well, I mean, outside of Cole Hudson for obvious reasons, why weren't these guys and maybe even Andrew Crystal called up from the Hershey Bears, as I wear the Bears Screaming Bear jersey on the episode today. The fact that these guys weren't getting these opportunities early in the season, that could have played a bigger factor too on the success of the team, especially when Pierre-Luc Dubois was injured.
I mean, you look at the season, it was interesting as they started off the first 2 months or a 700 hockey team. Then, once I think the turning point was when Ryan Leonard got hurt in Anaheim in December because they really seemed to struggle to put offense together. And like you were saying, they called up depth guys from Hershey. They didn't call up, the only one they called up was Miroshenko, and he played about 6 minutes a game, I believe, for a couple of games. It wasn't anything of significance. And then once the deadline passed, they had the meeting. And then eventually, once Hudson came up, they played 700 hockey again. And then, they ended up, I mean, the thing is weird about the Capitals season, they ended up 12th in the league in points. They basically missed the playoffs with 95 points, which is, the last 2 years that would have been in easily. But, it was the whole roster management this year was strange. I mean, even calling up a guy like Protas for a couple games for a spark. They were just, I think they went about 2 months without winning back-to-back games and the rest of the season playing 700 hockey, which is, just a weird, weird, strange paradox. You're this good with a fuller lineup and you're this bad. And it's not like the Capitals didn't, basically say all year, we need another top six forward. And, obviously when Dubois went out, that kind of, magnified that need and they still didn't make any kind of major move. I mean, the only thing that Chris Patrick did from last year is sort of from Florida for a second rounder, which I mean, he turned out to be a good player, but he's got criticized then too. But that was the only ad they had. And, it really wasn't enough.
And you mentioned Justin Sortif, which we both agree is possibly the best move that Chris Patrick has done since officially becoming named general manager. Because let's be honest, Matt Roy, Jacob Chychrun, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Logan Thompson, and even then Andrew Mangiapane, those are really Brian McClellan's moves before becoming, before elevating Chris Patrick. The interesting thing is that Sortif, when he got plugged into the power play, along with Ryan Leonard, along with Ilya Protas, along with Cole Hudson, we know the thing about Hudson because of college, but the fact that these guys were getting implemented into the power play late in the season instead of earlier on in the season, once you've realized, like, oh, we have something here with Sortif. We knew what we had with Ryan Leonard. It's like, why wasn't this youth being put into the power play? Because what's the one thing we always talked about? They didn't make the defenders move enough to open up those opportunities. Once we literally had a power play unit of Ovechkin, Leonard, Protas, Sortif, and Hudson, and it was buzzing. It was buzzing, and it was so great to see. And it's like, that's what we kind of need to see going in the next season too, for the Capitals. And it's like, I think that's where the Capitals kind of need to go. It's like, yeah, you need top six, but if Ilya Protas can be that guy, if Ryan Leonard's ready to maybe make that leap a little bit next season in his sophomore year, that would help in that top six realm if you can't get anyone. But at the same time, the free agency is looking scarce right now, so you're going to have to, make a hockey trade to
Right.
make it
I
happen
mean,
this
plus,
offseason.
getting back to Ovechkin too, if you lose him, then you need two top sixes, and then it just becomes more expensive. So, I mean, obviously, the easy solution for Washington is to, basically find out what Ovi wants. He still scored 32 goals and led the team in points. So it's not like, people make the comparison when Wayne Gretzky retired. I mean, Gretzky, when he retired, had 9 goals and back issues. That's why he called it quits. It wasn't because he couldn't play. He basically couldn't play anymore. Ovechkin, he said the last game he was healthy. He's still producing. He doesn't quite pass the eye test like he used to, but he's still scoring goals. And until he stops scoring goals, it's hard to replace 32 goals in the lineup right now.
Yeah. Toru, any thoughts on Ovi and the
I
Caps?
actually two questions I had, which is kind of interesting. Just number one, I mean, what is just the vibe right now, like today, this morning, with the Caps fan base? Is it more like, well, that sucked. Well, let's get better next season, or is it just like being discussed with every? I mean, what is the vibe? I mean, because I know the way Oilers fans get when things aren't going well, and or is it like, okay, there's always next season, and we got the pieces, that kind of thing, or is it like fire everybody or whatever? Is it like, what's
Well,
the
we definitely have the idiots who are like, fire Spencer Carberry,
vibe? Yeah.
which is not the right move to make in that sense. But we do have, I can say, just being a season ticket holder to the Washington Capitals, I can say that there's a lot of discontent in the fan base over Chris Patrick.
Okay.
And the moves that he made, the lack of moves that he made, the way the trade deadline went down in regards to how it leaked about the Nick Dowd trade and how the John Carlson trade went about too, there's a lot of discontent amongst the fan base when it
Yeah,
comes to Chris Patrick.
how was that? I mean, that Carlson thing must have been shock. That was a shocker, right? No one.
Yeah, no, the players didn't even anticipate it. I mean,
No.
considering Carlson was here for 17 years, and they basically didn't, normally he didn't have a he Anaheim wasn't on his no trade list, but usually if a player's been there that long, they will discuss a trade before making it. They
I
didn't
see.
bother. And I think there was a little, Carlson was a popular player with the fan base. Obviously, he was one of the four remaining from the Cup team. And it just, I think a lot of fans were upset with it, and I think, he'd been selling all year long that they were going to improve. Like, I don't think the option of we're just going to sell without attempting to improve our club was and considered an option. I certainly didn't think it was. I mean, he was, since last year's draft, he basically was like, we're going to add a top six. We're going to add a top six. They even banked cap space all through the season specifically for our top six forward. And then they didn't even, then they traded Carlson, and they got two rentals for a season that was going nowhere.
I know.
And it was just, I mean, it was a surprise to everybody. I think, more damaging to the Caps, obviously, was the play, for the players, because, they were not the only ones expecting help. And if you've gone 5 months through a season, you're dealing with injuries, you're dealing with a short roster, and management doesn't throw you a landline, a lifeline, you're kind of not real happy about it. They came out of the deadline. They got beaten by Boston pretty badly. I mean, not score wise, but the effort wasn't there. They beat Calgary the next night, but then Philadelphia again, March 11th versus Philadelphia, which is probably the game that got them out of the playoffs because, they ended up giving 2 points to the team that got in. They lost 2 points. So, it's I think, it's interesting because I
Yeah,
think
that's
some
heartbreaking.
fans want to go forward, but I mean, I mean, obviously, if you remember when Gretzky got traded, that would kind of be when Ovechkin left. If he left because of Caps management, that's a whole different ball of wax than him just
Yes,
walking,
I agree. No, what to leave a, yeah, let a healthy or relatively healthy Ovechkin go. I mean, that's my other question is. Is that going to happen? I mean, I know it's, I know he's younger, but McDavid, I mean, they're basically, this is all we got. It's up to you. Take as long as you need. Is it, it's not that situation though, right? It's not like they
I think it's basically what Ovechkin, Ovechkin was disappointed with the way he called the trade deadline this year the toughest day of his career, which is saying something of, with all the losses they've had in the
Yeah.
playoffs.
Well, the
So,
toughest day because of the moves that were made. Yeah.
just trading away,
And especially the way it went down, because the Nick Dowd trade was like agreed to the night before, but Patrick and McCrimmon both agreed, hey, we're going to announce it in the morning so that way you have time to talk to Nick Dowd to let him know that he's being traded, do the right thing. And then it leaked out that Dowd was being traded to Vegas. And then that's what then led to Patrick doing what he did on the Carlson trade, which happened at like 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern time,
Crazy.
where it's
That's crazy.
like Patrick tried calling Carlson before the trade was announced at like 1 in the morning, and obviously Carlson's asleep, so it's like Carlson's waking up to the news of him being traded. Ovi's waking up to the news that Carlson's been traded because he didn't want to have what happened with the Dowd trade, where like it's been agreed to, it's been finalized. They're just not announcing until the next morning. So it's like, and like some of the excuses that or in explanations that we got from Patrick at the trade deadline media availability, just it didn't pass the sniff test. It really didn't. And that was
Interesting.
like, and that's another reason why the fan base is very discontent with Chris Patrick as general manager of the
I see.
Capitals.
Yeah, it make me pretty annoyed for sure. I mean,
And I think, with the Michael was saying, he was talking about how expensive it was to get a top six. Well, with the cap going up, players, teams don't have to get rid of players anymore. You could actually hold on to contracts you may not like, because, the years past, you'd say, well, this guy's going to put us over the cap next year. We got to get rid of him. You don't have that anymore. So I think a lot of teams fell in that trap. The problem with Washington is they sold off and really, had they stay even just stood pat at the deadline, they're probably in. But they weakened their team
I
enough,
agree.
and
I agree.
they just missed. And now they're in the worst possible spot because they got the last, even though they're 12th, they got the last draft pick of the
Yep.
non-top teams. The
At
next
least
pick.
if you know, if you have advance warning, you can tank, right? I mean, at least give
Exactly.
us advance warning so we can
Well,
tank,
not
you
only
know?
that, but the other thing
Yeah.
is that when you look at it from this perspective of
Yeah, that's tough, man. That's
about
tough.
how it's coming about, it's like, people are going after Carberry, obviously, about the power play, but that's Kirk Muller who runs the power play. I mean, yeah, Carberry's the head coach, and that's under technically his purview, but Muller's the guy who runs the power play. And again, when we started seeing the young guys really start running roughshod, it was good on the power play. But then going back to like free agency and stuff like that, and the trade deadline, I was reading a comment earlier about like because Pierre LeBrun put out a tweet about the playoff salary cap. You have to be cap compliant going into games now in the playoffs. And that affected how a lot of teams did trades at the trade deadline. A guy who a lot of people thought was going to move was Vincent Trocheck of the New York Rangers. He stood pat in New York because teams weren't sure if, like, if they're making the playoffs, would they, what would their cap implications be like for the playoffs that literally start tomorrow or today at the time of you listening to this. So that also played a factor in a lot of things too. Like of what Starkey was saying about, like, with cap implications, it's like, yeah, moving forward next season, it's not going to be a bigger deal because it goes up. But when you had the playoffs with a salary cap this year for the first time, that also made a lot of teams not want to make moves.
Oh yeah, no. As I said, it was kind of a surprise to everybody, and I think, it's people always they talk about getting Anaheim's first round pick, but you think about it, like I was estimating, you probably give away $5 million in playoff ticket revenue and other merchandise, and you're probably going to have to pay Ovechkin more now because, he wants them to basically put up or shut up, for his contract. So it's probably a $10 million draft pick. And if you look at where Anaheim's picking, which could be
Interesting.
like around 19, you look at that player, it's not like, you may get a third liner, but that's not going to turn your franchise around.
And one
So.
criticism that you Starkey has said to me when we chat was the fact that Chris Patrick just doesn't want to trade these draft assets. And like they have a lot of great draft assets that they can easily flip in a trade to try to bring in a top six guy. But he just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, draft picks and prospects are great, but, eventually, even if you bring up all your prospects, you're gonna have to pay them all, and that's not gonna happen. So you got to be judicious about it. I mean, they had their first round pick from this year before they got Anaheim, so they had their first round pick next year, which they could use in a trade. And it's just, it was just inaction. They didn't do anything while the team didn't win back-to-back games. They seemed to turn the season around a little bit when they got Dubois back from injury. And then they kind of pulled the rug out, and that was it for the season. I mean, I give the players a lot of credit for getting as close as they did. I don't know how much of it was, we're going to do this despite what management did to us, but it was clear they didn't have quite enough to make it. And you with a guy like Ovechkin on the roster, who's maybe 2 seasons left, to kind of say, well, you're not getting a playoff run this year. That's
Yeah, that sucks. That
yeah, it's not
sucks.
a. It's not a very, it's, I think it's an analytical decision because you're saying, well, we're probably not bringing Carlson back, but at the same time, it costs your organization a lot of money. It makes your team honestly less attractive to come to or be traded to because, they want a team, players want to go to a team that thinks they're going to win. I was
Oh, yeah.
debating, someone about a trade the Caps did 13 years ago, for ERAT. They traded Philip Forsberg, but it
The
was a
trade
terrible
that
trade.
just keeps getting talked about, you
Yes,
know.
but it was a terrible trade. But it was in good intentions. He was trying to win, and had that never happened, TJ Oshie never becomes a Capital, and they probably never win the Stanley Cup. So,
Yeah, and actually, I think you and I were having that conversation briefly, not because we were debating anything, but just because it just came up in conversation just in general for us. I think it
right. I
might have
was.
been because of the guy who you were debating with, I think on Twitter or whatever it was, when you and I
Yeah,
were just
no.
starting to talk about it.
Yeah, it's just so I was just talking about the worst trade deadlines the Caps have had, and this certainly qualifies because, like I said, have they even stood pat during the deadline? I think they're a playoff team,
Absolutely.
and they didn't. They got their team just slightly worse.
When
Granted,
they
they
just slightly didn't make
exactly.
the
They
playoffs.
just, as I said, one game down the stretch, one of those 3 games they turn around, they're probably in. But as I said, it was. They're trying to cash out on John Carlson, and it just,
Like
it just, I don't, I, it's not.
it made sense to trade him because he was in the last year of his contract. You knew you probably weren't going to bring him
Right,
back.
right, right.
So you want to move him and get something for him, but this was also one of those things where it's like maybe it's also kind of okay to let him walk and not worry about getting something in return. Like you finish the season with him,
Or
and then you
yeah.
deal with that maybe leading up into the draft when you still have his rights. Like you
Or if you
trade.
trade him, or if you trade him, you bring someone back in on defense. You know, someone you're not like, oh, we're totally pulling the plug on the season. We're just trying to
Yeah,
maximize. It's just, you know, when you have
it
right.
felt weird too because it's like you trade Carlson, and then like what was it? Was it like 2 weeks later we ended up getting Cole Hutson in the lineup?
Right.
So like Hutson kind of acted like that, but again, like you had said, like on the defensive side of things,
Right.
it took a hit, but because you can't just expect Cole Hutson to come in and just fully turn everything around
Well,
by
and,
himself.
yeah, and you and plus Cole Hutson's not that kind of player anyway. He's an offensive guy. I mean, you look at that Rangers game where they got blown out on national television, the Devils game, their defense was horrific. You know, and it was basically some of those games they had to outscore their opponents, and it was just, you know, you give up 15 goals to the Devils and Rangers when you're in the playoffs, playoff chase, and you know, it was just terrible. And like I said, you know, Cole Hutson, you know, he's a great puck. I've said this before, he's essentially a fourth forward. You know, he will rush the puck. He'll score on breakaways, which he did this year. But you know, you need someone who can play defense too, and they didn't have that. And obviously, they played, you know, Logan Thompson down the stretch, and he looked tired by the end of it. But you know, clearly Charlie Lindgren was, you know, battling something because obviously he spent the rest of the year out. You know, so, but yeah, it was very short-sighted. I think that Chris Patrick thought that he could make another deal, that he could kind of make up for losing Carlson, and he never did. And that, as I said, is if he did nothing, it was better than what he did on deadline day.
And so with that, we'll talk more about the Caps in the upcoming weeks because there's other analytical breakdowns that we want to do. But now it is time to talk playoffs. The playoffs literally start this Saturday or today if you're listening to it before the playoffs begin. We're actually going to start out west. We're going to talk about Edmonton Oilers and the Anaheim Ducks, and then Toru is going to have to leave us for a little bit till the end of the show. So, Toru, I have to just start this off right off the bat. How do you feel that your Oilers are not having to play the LA Kings for the fifth time
Well,
in a row?
that was the big fear. Well, you know, one thing that's good is I can actually wear my Oilers cap around LA finally after 5 years. I mean, so that thing's kind of, I mean, one thing that is, I did manage to see a playoff game over at Crypto last year. That was nice, very scary. I was surrounded by black, and I just cheered so loud when I actually saw a classic McDavid goal. I mean, it was beautiful. It was a thing of beauty,
But
I gotta
let me
say.
ask you,
But
do you really feel
it's funny because I was just like, I went up. You know, anyway. But that being
but
said, I'm very glad I can Orange County is far away. So I don't have to worry about that. So I can proudly wear my Oilers cap in the coming weeks ahead. So
I don't know, man. Anaheim's like what, 15 minutes away from LA?
they have
Not with traffic.
Yeah, there's a lot of traffic, and that is kind of where Pure Hockey and Hockey Monkey are. So if I have to pick up anything, it's a little dangerous. But I think I'm stocked up for now. So, but it's yeah, that was one of those things where, and plus, yeah, you know, we got such a streak going against the Kings, you know, that I'm thinking, and it's just, I mean, how can you like? Actually, I heard something. I think at the end of the game, when the commentators were saying, well, I think people had kind of really started enjoying the rivalry. And one of the guys, I think he's probably an LA guy, kind of goes, yeah, but it's not really a rivalry. It's sort of one-sided. And I kept on thinking, you know what? And I almost just from that last game, just the way LA's got to be so. I mean, they just hate the Oilers here. It's crazy. And I'm almost thinking that, you know, maybe they just wanted to win that last game. I know they're fighting for their playoff lives, but I think they just want to beat the Oilers. I said, you know what? If they play the Kings, they might not win. I don't know. Because the Oilers aren't great this year. I mean, you know, they're not shoo-in, let's put it that way. I don't think they had a shoo-in to beat the Kings. So I feel like Anaheim's a I feel better against them personally, and Mr. Carlson notwithstanding, I decide with you on the trade now. I'm thinking, damn it, why'd you guys trade it? What's wrong with you guys? I kind of feel it's I think it's I like that series better, that matchup better for, from an Oilers perspective, because it's interesting. They played three games, and I think they scored about 28 goals in the process. And the interesting is that, I don't know if you've been following, but the Oilers really tightened up on defense, and that was the big problem, because they can all score goals, but they had, I think they were on the bottom for goals against. And right with them was Anaheim, who very young, and they just didn't take care of that. And I think they still have, they're still in that bottom rung, and I think they're the only non or the only playoff team that has as bad of a goals against record. Now Edmonton is third in the league in goals against. Now, I don't, they made some great moves, actually. I can't remember if it was right at the trade deadline, but they said we got to fix the defense, and they did. And they've changed their game since we can always score goals. Let's not worry about that. That's not the problem. And now their goals against.
Well, I know one change that the Oilers did was they brought Paul Coffey was brought back to help their
Yes.
offense. That was a
Yes.
big thing there. But one question for you on this one, Toru, is how are you feeling about the Oilers goaltending? Obviously midway through the season, the Oilers did the trade with the Pittsburgh Penguins, Stuart Skinner for Tristan Jarry. How are you feeling about Jarry being the one between the pipes for the Oilers in this
I
front?
don't think he's going to be the guy behind the Oilers unless Connor gets hurt, Ingram gets hurt. I mean, I think, I mean, every I know the fan base is totally sold on Connor Ingram. He with the and it's not just him, to sort of to Jari's defense, they just changed their game. And they're not leaving the goaltenders out to dry anymore, which is nice. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. But I know the fan base, when I'm picking up maybe from Knobloch and management, that's their number one right now is Connor Ingram. And this, it's crazy. But I don't people aren't talking about Jari anymore. It's crazy. I'm thinking he's pretty much the backup right now. And so in that sense, I if he went in there, I don't think he'd be bad. He played well, but it's kind of weird. He's not considered, at least in the fan base, and that we know how that can be very skewed. In the fan base, he's not considered number one. I mean, he's kind of the backup right now.
Starkey, what are your thoughts on the Oilers Ducks series?
I mean, I think it'll be an interesting series. I mean, the thing, the Oilers, obviously they made the playoffs and the finals the last 2 years, and they really got hot at the right time. And if you look where they are right now in the Pacific, they could get to the Western Finals without playing a 100-point team. So it's not exactly a really difficult road to the final. I mean, probably the biggest threat in the Pacific is Vegas. Just because they got so hot after Tortorella got hired, but
No, it's crazy.
the Ducks haven't been in the playoffs for years. It's kind of a team that's been up and down. The Oilers always seem to play well in the playoffs. They had the last 2 years, and they haven't had the best team in the West, but they are able to outscore teams, and the teams they're facing are certainly the Ducks are not an overly imposing team compared to some of these other teams. And I think that, they have a good shot to go at least to the Western Final. I mean, granted, the 2 years the Edmonton made the Western Finals, they had Dallas, who was just wiped out by the time they got to the third round because they got pummeled in the Central Division playoffs. And, that's certainly looking like another
Another
thing. But,
bloodbath there, man. Oh.
yeah, I mean, the Oilers they're in a good spot. I mean,
Agree.
obviously they're probably, like you were saying about the Kings, I mean, I think they kind of had a mental edge over the Kings, but the Ducks are still their team that hasn't been in the playoffs in a long time. Carlson will help, but overall, McDavid is McDavid. He can will his team to wins, and I think they have a good shot to at least get to the second round, if not the third round this year. Granted, maybe that third round you have to hope that Colorado or Minnesota or Dallas are going to be wiped out by then, which is possible, but.
That's I mean I was that's the hope. That's the plan.
Yeah.
That was the plan all along. Yes.
The playoffs are, the playoffs are all about matchups, and the Oilers, them and the Golden Knights probably have the two easiest paths to the conference finals of any other teams in the
And
league.
I and when we see that, then that's a good series, but we know that They can beat the Golden Knights. Now it's scary what happened. I don't know what happened with the coaching change. I don't. I. It just all of a sudden became good. I don't know what happened. But
So, speaking of, go
oh, go
ahead,
ahead.
Tora. No,
Oh
go
no,
ahead. Finish that.
I'll just finish up. And plus, throwing. I've heard, they're doing the usual. We don't know if Draisaitl will be ready for game one, but I've heard this. This is what I heard. He was, everything looks like it's final, tightening the screws. And first of all, talk about gifts, and all due respect to all Canucks fans out there, I'm friends with some of them, is that, boy, could you ask for a better gift than number one, have a game last night, the last game of the year, and play the last place team, and play the Canucks. And I think Ekholm was saying it was good. We were playing a team that was pretty much ready to just go home. Like they were just saying, all right, we're done. And they just wanted the game to end. And it was just a good confidence builder. Savoy getting a hat trick. I mean, it's a good confidence builder, going in, and it also gave that extra few days. And Draisaitl, apparently, they're doing there. He's stuck around with all the scratches at the end of practice. So everything's looking good. And then he took like something like 25 or quite a few, quite a few shots from all five different spots of the one timers. And he was just working on those. So he's really turned
Turning it up.
to tighten up screws. So everything looks like he's ready for game one, and they're just not saying, but it's certainly gonna be an early entry. So anyway, so that's good.
Yeah, and of course, game one between the Ducks and the Oilers will be Monday, April 20th.
Yes.
So I want to ask this last question. Both of you can answer this. We've talked about coaches. We'll talk about coaches more when we get to the Vegas series as well. And even the Flyers-Penguins series, because there's a little interesting note about that one. But what do you guys think about the coaching matchup between Chris Knobloch of the Oilers and Joel Quenneville of the Anaheim Ducks? Because obviously Quenneville has won three Stanley Cups and was pretty much the beginning piece of the what became the Panthers' little dynasty of back-to-back Stanley
Yep.
Cups. What do you think about that coaching matchup between those two, and who do you think would have the edge in that?
I mean, I think that, obviously Quenneville is a great coach, but I think Anaheim's still pretty green. You get first year playoff teams are usually happy to be there, and you have to learn how to really ramp up your play. I mean, like we were saying, the Oilers are the prototypical team of, they elevate their play this time of year. They're not necessarily the best regular season team, but they have the talent, and I think that Quenneville will be building a nice team out in Anaheim. But I think you're playing the two-time Western Conference champs. That's a real tall order for them.
Yeah, I would definitely agree in the sense that, I mean, coaching, yeah, I mean that's hard because I mean that's hard. I mean, they're both outstanding, obviously. And one thing, number one, I think Knobloch also knows his teams really well. So it no one you I we all the fans question everything he does, especially this year. But he somehow seems to know what he's doing. Like it comes down, I don't know if, I don't know what it is. And so I think there's that familiarity with the team, and he knows kind of how to work with the Oilers, so that's there. And I think there's something to be said for, I was saying, how they really tightened up on defense, and I think everybody's bought into it because, they're third right now in goals against. I don't know how they went from the bottom to the top three, but and that's what they did. Anaheim is the same; it was in the same boat. But I think they're so young, I don't think they just naturally buy into it in the way the Oilers will. And another third thing I heard was, this will be their third shot at trying to get to the Western Conference, be the champs. And they said maybe they've learned that maybe November, December aren't that important, and maybe that was the illusion. And but they're actually, they said that's when you'd play your best hockey is in the playoffs, and you know how to play playoff hockey. So I'd say you're right. I think it's just the team. Is better, but that being said, it's no shoo-in at all. So I'm gonna be nervous every game, but coach to coach, yeah, I think they're pretty equivalent. I'm with you, but I think the team, the situations are very different, and the teams are very different. Yeah,
Yep.
so.
So with that, Toro, you're going to step away for a little bit. but we'll have you back at the end of the episode to talk playoff predictions. So with
Yeah,
that, we're gonna
I gotta go for a swim, so
yeah.
yeah,
So with that, we're gonna take a quick little break. I don't know how I'm gonna edit this in, but we're gonna take a quick little break. Alrighty, Satoru has left us for now. It is just Starkey and I. Starkey, let's stay in the West. We're gonna stay in the Pacific Division of, or not the, no, the yeah, the Pacific Division, with man, I am blanking so badly. Vegas and Utah. There we go. Yes, Vegas and Utah. Obviously, for the Utah Mammoth, this is their first time ever in the playoffs because the Coyotes' history did not carry over with the Mammoth because they were considered an expansion franchise. Going up against the Vegas Golden Knights, who are 7-0-1 since John Tortorella has taken over as the head coach. What are your thoughts on this series?
I mean, I think, like you were saying about, Tortorella really came in, kind of energized the team to, obviously the Vegas was in trouble not making the playoffs whatsoever. And then, eventually they won the Pacific Division with 95 points. Basically, I think they're a pretty solid team. As we alluded to earlier, I said, Pacific Division is obviously not an overly daunting task. I think the fact that you're not going to have to face a 100-point team until at least the Western Finals is a big advantage for any of those teams that can break through, because you probably will be in much better shape than, say, Colorado or Dallas. Vegas, I think their biggest weakness is going to be their goaltending, but that may not be a problem until the third round. I mean, I think Utah obviously get a nice core. I think first-time playoff team is always tough. Probably be a very good crowd in Salt Lake for this, but. I think Vegas is obviously playoff tested, and I think they're going to win the series.
What do you think about the
That's great. Ryan
Zamath?
Smith has done a great job with marketing that team. It's been funny that, for 2 seasons they've had kind of obstructed view at least on one side. Hopefully that's fixed next year. But they've done a great job, and they're going to get the Olympics in a couple of years. So there'll be a, they got a nice team from Phoenix, and it's going to be interesting to see how far they can go. I mean, I think this year, like I said, it's first year, it's always tough because you kind of have to learn, and it's been a while for the Coyotes slash Mammoth to make the playoffs. And so I think, Vegas is obviously, I think, got a huge advantage in experience, but I think they'll put up a good fight.
So you mentioned goaltending. When you look at this series specifically, you have Kirill Vejmelka for the Mammoth and Vitek Vanacek, who's the backup for the Mammoth as well, going up against Adin Hill, Carter Hart, who, people who know my opinions, I feel like him and the other four should not be back in hockey with what went on with that case. And third goalie, who I'm blanking on at the moment time, because it because Adin Hill's been kind of the go-to guy a lot, until Carter Hart came back from his injury, and ironically came along the timeline of when Tortorella took over, because Tortorella has a little bit of a history with Carter Hart from their time in Philadelphia. When you look at that goaltending matchup, who do you think really has the edge between the Mammoth and the Golden Knights?
I mean, I think, I mean, even with the subpar goaltending, I think I'd still rather take Adin Hill. Obviously, we know Vanacek from Washington, and I don't think he'll be starting. He was never been a playoff goaltender, and so
Well, we know Vejmelko is the number one and for the Mammoth.
right. But I still would probably take Hill. It's not an endorsement of Hill by any means. It's just I think Vegas is very built up front. The D is okay, and the goaltending is probably what's going to be the problem eventually down the road. Can Utah take advantage of that? I'm not really sure they can. As I said, I think they'll put up a spirited fight, but I think Vegas is just a lot more experienced, and obviously they probably get Edmonton next round, and that's where they may see the issues, but I don't think they'll see them this round.
Yeah, and not only that, but the other thing that helps Vegas is that they still have a big core from that Cup team that
Right.
won in 2023. Like
Right.
the core is still pretty much almost very intact. And Tortorella being the guy who kind of is now steering the ship, who is a Stanley Cup champion in his own right,
Yep.
makes things very interesting. It's still very shocking they did that with 8 games left in the season.
Yeah. No, it was. I mean, I think they realized that they had a good chance of missing the playoffs, and like we were talking about with the trade deadline, sometimes you just need a jolt, and even if you get a jolt for 10 games, if it gets you in the playoffs, that means a lot of money to you, and that's what happens. That's why teams try to do this, because they know they can get the revenue, they know they can help themselves down the road by getting in the playoffs versus not. And I think, Vegas took, I mean, obviously the Islanders did the same thing and that did not work for them. So it doesn't always work, but, I think Bruce Cassidy did a good job there. But, coaches have a shelf life in this league. You look at Vegas, they go through coaches every couple of years, like, a lot of other teams do. And, you had Pete DeBoer there, you had,
Gerard
Gerard
Gallant was
Gallant.
the first, and then it was DeBoer, then it was Cassidy, now it's Tortorella, and Tortorella may not even be back after this season. He's only
Right,
signed till the
and
end
that's
of
the
the
amazing
season.
thing. He's a, unlike DeBoer, he signed a, extension. Tortorella can go where else, and obviously he's helping his cause as a free agent now. I mean, maybe it's better off that he didn't sign, because it'll be interesting the next few days what coaches are like. Oh, I presume Berube in Toronto is not going to be there next year, and there's going to be a couple other coaches that. Either miss the playoffs or get knocked out in the first round, that may find themselves out of a job in a couple of days.
And actually, one that kind of keep an eye on it, depending on how they do, is maybe even Knobloch
Yep,
in
exactly.
Edmonton. And honestly, a team that would really benefit from a guy like Tortorella would be Edmonton.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So moving on, we're the other. It's kind of funny. We have another Pacific team, but they're not playing in the Pacific Division. They're playing in the Central Division for the playoffs, and that is the Los Angeles Kings as they're taking on the Colorado Avalanche. We both kind of acknowledge the fact that Colorado is probably going to manhandle the Kings. But this is the last hurrah for Anze Kopitar, who announced at the beginning of the season that this will be his last season. What are your thoughts on when we look at Los Angeles versus Colorado?
I mean, I think Colorado is probably the fa I mean, probably the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. I think, again, like Vegas, their biggest weakness is in net. Blackwood and
Wedgewood.
the other, Wedgwood. I mean, both, they're okay goaltenders, but they're probably not the goaltenders you want for a Stanley Cup contender. Other than that, the Avs are stacked. Ever since Landeskog came back this year, they've been, one of the best teams. They obviously dominated the first part of the year. They cooled off a little bit, but they're going to be a really hard team to beat. And I think, Kopitar has been a great story. Obviously, he's had his farewell tour. Kings, they're kind of the unfortunate. We're the last team in, so you get the best team in the playoffs this year. Maybe. They probably win one game in LA with Kopitar's last game in Crypto Arena, but I can't really see Colorado falling this round. I mean, the big thing for Colorado is probably to be ready for Dallas or Minnesota, because that's going to be probably the toughest series they have until the final, just because with the Pacific winners, Pacific teams will basically, you won't have to face a 100-point team since it's all the Western final. And obviously, this is Colorado's one kind of easier series compared to what's coming.
Yeah, and let's be honest, Nathan MacKinnon is probably still very angry about the Olympics and will probably come in and try to dominate the Stanley Cup playoffs big time, and we'll probably see that on display in the first round against Los Angeles as well. So I can definitely see that. Moving on, we have the we'll go right into our last West series, as you alluded to, which was the Minnesota Wild versus the Dallas Stars. I'm still kind of disappointed. At the time of recording, I am disappointed in the Minnesota Wild for not bringing out the 25th anniversary jerseys to wear on the road against the Dallas Stars, because the Stars are wearing their not what is dubbed the 99s alternate jerseys at home during the playoffs, which is awesome. I hope they kind of transition to that as their full-time stuff because their current jerseys have never been the greatest in the begin with. You mentioned how, oh, it's going to be a dogfight, in the Central Division as a whole. It really begins with this series right here between Minnesota and Dallas. What are your thoughts when you look at the Wild and the Stars? Be
I mean, I
besides
think,
the irony that the Dallas Stars moved from Minnesota.
oh well, that's obvious, but I think Minnesota is probably the angriest team at this playoff format because I think, obviously, to do all they did this season and end up playing probably the second likely Western team to make the final behind Colorado, especially in the first round. I mean, I think, Dallas is one of those teams they've been knocking on the door, but they've kind of run out of gas by the third round. Obviously, very likely they're going to have to face Colorado in the second round if they get through. Minnesota added Luke Hughes this year, and they've been a very, very good team. But are they at the level of Dallas or Colorado? Probably not. They're certainly capable of pulling off an upset, but I just think that Dallas. That Dallas Colorado winner is probably the one that's going to the final. And I think that, Minnesota is just kind of in a tough spot. It's almost better if you're a wild card and switch over than have to do that.
Yeah, and then in moving over to the East, we have the Montreal Canadiens taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is a rematch of the 2021 Stanley Cup final. Very interesting to say that line with an Eastern Conference first round matchup, but we knew how 2021 was. When you look at this series, obviously this is the second year in a row for the Canadiens making the playoffs. Tampa Bay, they have the opportunity to keep the Florida streak in the finals alive. I'm like, even though in predictions later, I will say Tampa Bay, I secretly wish that Montreal would win this series
Okay.
because one, I just don't want a Florida team in the Cup final again.
Sure.
It's been like what, 9 years? Something
Yeah.
like that.
19, I think. Yeah. 19, Blues and Bruins.
Yeah, so it's been a while since a Florida team has not been in the Cup final. But I just think that, the Canadians did learn a lot of valuable lessons against the Capitals last year when they played them in the playoffs. So it, kind of like what you talked about when it came with the Anaheim Ducks and the Utah Mammoth about being a first-time playoff team. This is a second-time playoff team. They have a little bit of that experience, a little bit of that edge to them now. But how do you see this series?
I mean, I think Montreal is another team that probably is the unfortunate draw club. Had they played Buffalo, I think their chances of winning this round were probably a lot better. I think Tampa Bay, at times this year, they have been the best team in the East by far. They've cooled off a bit, but they have all the tools to be at least make another run at another title. I think Montreal. It's obviously had Montreal. Been a little bit deeper, a little bit more experienced. I think I would probably give them a little bit more, but obviously Tampa Bay has probably the most experience of any team in the tournament this year with Florida out. So I think it's Montreal is a very good team. They probably are going to go far in another Stanley Cup playoff, but I don't think this is the one. I think that Tampa Bay is just going to be too good for them.
And then obviously shifting over, we got the Boston Bruins against the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres returning to the playoffs for the first time in 15 years, and the Bruins under first year head coach Marco Sturm. One, I'm excited for the Sabres. I'm glad that they're back in the playoffs. Ironically, it's that to the dismay of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I've made the joke that what took the Sabres to get better was the Maple Leafs to suck. Because if you, I mean, and we got two more series to talk about, and then as we talk about at least one of the other series, when we look at the West outside of Utah making the playoffs in Anaheim, which Anaheim was already on that trajectory to kind of finally make the playoffs a little bit, and getting Joel Quenneville as their head coach was going to kind of bump them up. Utah was only the real true surprise in the Western Conference of making the playoffs, because we always expected like either Nashville or Winnipeg. But in the East, this has so much more parity and so much turnover, because we don't have the Florida Panthers, we don't have a Toronto Maple Leafs, we don't have a New Jersey Devils, we don't have a Washington Capitals, we don't have a New York Rangers who just went, holy hell, what the hell happened to the Rangers this year? You know, so like, and even the Islanders are out. So that's like six teams that didn't make the playoffs. And now, granted, two of those probably wouldn't have made it.
Probably
But,
would.
you know, you look at how the East was, and Boston and Buffalo are two of those teams who took spots from teams that probably should have been in the playoffs in a way.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, obviously the Sabres, you know, they've been a great story. They were last in the conference in December, and they, you know, went on a terrific run. You know, they basically, their strength and perhaps their weakness in the playoffs is going to be, because, you know, they just opened up the scoring. You know, obviously Tage Thompson's been terrific. Alex Tuch has been terrific, and you just see them outscore opponents. You know, the classic game they had a couple of weeks ago in Tampa Bay was, I believe, 8-7, you know, just the shootout. So, but, you know, in the playoffs, it's a totally different animal. I think the Sabres are a better team than the Bruins. The biggest question for me is, how will Jeremy Swayman play? I mean, I think he's going to be the best goalie in that series. I'm not a huge fan of Buffalo's goaltending trio. And I think at some point, a team is going to kind of frustrate them offensively. And is Boston the team to do it? Maybe. I'm not sure Buffalo makes it past Tampa Bay if it comes to that. I'm not even sure if they would get by Montreal. I think they will get by Boston, but I think it's going to be a pretty tight series.
Yeah. And then, of course, over on the Metro side, which very ironically, it's a Atlantic team playing in the Metro Division, as the Ottawa Senators take on the Carolina Hurricanes. Obviously, this is the second year for the Senators making the playoffs again, and the eighth year in a row under Rod Brind'Amour for the Carolina Hurricanes. You know that the pressure's got to be on the Canes this year, because under Rod Brind'Amour, they've made the Eastern Conference Finals three times and have only won one game in said Eastern Conference Final. And then for Ottawa, this is them. I think this is the series where Linus Ullmark could come in and just go, let's rewrite my story. Because he has had a rough year this year with his mental health, which, I can feel for that big time. But I think this could be a really good series for Linus Ullmark.
Agreed.
What are your
I
thoughts?
was gonna say, I think that, you know, Carolina is another team that's the unfortunate victim of this system, because had they finished second in the Metro, they would have gotten an easier opponent than they got, because I think Ottawa was banged up down the stretch, but they still played really good hockey. I kind of refer to them as Florida Panthers Junior. They're not quite as good as the Panthers. They play a similar style, which, I mean, I don't think the Canes like to get punched in the face, and I think Ottawa will punch them in the face. I think the goaltending for Ottawa is better. I mean, Bussy's been a great story, and Freddie Anderson, I would not trust a Stanley Cup contending team in net. You know, it's kind of an amazing story to me how Carolina's had this mediocre goaltending behind a pretty good team for, you know, those 8 years, and they've never really gotten the goaltending they've needed. And I don't think they're going to have it this year. I mean, I think it's going to be a very, very tight series for the Hurricanes. I think they're going to have to win those first two games at home and stay ahead, because I think if they fall behind, the Senators are going to be all sorts of problems. You know, I think this is a much tougher series for Carolina than they would face if they advance. I mean, I think they have a much better matchup against Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, but this is not a great matchup for Carolina. And I think Ottawa, this is probably the one series I think is most likely to be an upset.
It's interesting, because like one thing that we always know is that Frederik Andersen cannot stay healthy in the for the Canes, especially when it comes to the playoffs. So this could be Brandon Bussy's, maybe this is his, break. I mean, obviously he's had a great season, but this
Right.
could be like maybe where, even in defeat, this is where he kind of cements himself as the future number one goalie of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Right. I mean, he's, you look at it, he's an AHL lifer, which is, obviously it's a great story for him as well. However, is this the goalie you're going to have if you're a true Stanley Cup contender and you don't have a really, I mean, even when Anderson's been healthy this year, he's been really not great. So, I mean, you have no insurance if he kind of buckles under the pressure, and it's really hard to see Carolina winning. I mean, it's hard to see them winning four rounds and probably three as well. I just think that, had they had the goaltending the last couple of years, they probably would have had another cup in Raleigh, but I cannot see them going all the way.
Yeah, and again, like I touched base on this, I think Linus Ullmark, I think deep down inside he wants this, like he needs that series win because the last 2 years with Boston and Ottawa, respectively, not really getting to, especially with Boston when they had that historic season and then just falling flat in the playoffs. And then last year, having the struggles that he did in his first year in Ottawa in the playoffs, like I think Ullmark is really looking forward to this. To, like I said at the beginning of this, when we started talking about the series, rewrite the story
Right.
for him. And then not only that, but Brady Tkachuk. You have to look at him, seeing his brother win this, go to the Cup final 3 years in a row, winning the Stanley Cup the last two, being in attendance, seeing his brother win the Stanley Cup both times. Obviously Matthew will be cheering on for Brady throughout the playoffs. So I think that will be an interesting storyline to kind of see, for Brady, especially for Ottawa in this first round for against Carolina.
Yep, no, and I think the Senators are going to try to get him off their game, and I think if they win one of those first two games in Raleigh, I think it's going to be really tough sledding for the Hurricanes. I mean, as I said, they got a really good team, but that goaltending, and like I said, the Senators just play a similar style, and I'm sure Tkachuk is going to get a lot of tips from his brother on how to beat the Hurricanes because that's who knocked out, Florida knocked out Carolina last year. So
Yeah.
I think they're going to get under their skin. And it's going to be interesting to see how Carolina deals with it.
Yeah. And that then brings us to our final series of the Stanley Cup for playoffs first round, which is the Philadelphia Flyers versus the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Battle of Pennsylvania. I'm not going to lie, between the Minnesota-Dallas series, this is the other series I'm really excited for because while it would have been cool to see the Capitals take on the Penguins in the first round, I just love watching the Penguins and the Flyers play too, because that's a long time rivalry between two teams that have been in the league since expansion in 1967. And it also goes to show, and this is something maybe Chris Patrick should learn, this is what happens when you bring up the kids and let them play. And not just like, yeah, just bring him, put him in the lineup carves and just play him 6 minutes. Like, play. Look what happened. So, what are your thoughts on this series? Because, like I said, this is what I'm excited for because I do like the Battle of Pennsylvania personally.
I mean, the interesting thing is too, is you look at what if Michigan State makes the Frozen Four and not get knocked out, then I think Martone's been a great addition to them. He added a lot of energy, like you said. Sometimes you bring up these kids, even at short term, you bring in a dose of energy, it helps the entire team. Obviously the Flyers are really good down the stretch. I think the difference was probably going to be, even though Pittsburgh's goaltending is not great, I am not sold on Vladar as their goaltender for the Flyers. I think the Penguins' experience, even though they haven't been in the playoffs and haven't won a playoff series in quite a while, I still think that they are probably a little bit better than the Flyers. I think that, obviously Sidney Crosby's been terrific as he always is. Malkin is probably coming back next year because of what he did this year. Erik Karlsson has been, obviously a terrific, finally showed the promise that he had coming from San Jose a couple of years ago. I think as said, the Flyers are, I think they obviously with Rick Tocchet, they've been a lot more energetic. They've been able to overcome some issues and, they finished strong. They took the playoff spot. They, despite all the talk about the division and the tiebreakers and all that, they came in and they won the games they needed to. And, it'll be interesting to see how they do against Pittsburgh. But I do think Pittsburgh is a slightly better team, and I think they will advance to probably not do so great in the next round, but this is their round to win.
I'm just gonna say it now. I hope the Flyers win, so that way my dad can come home from his 2 month cruise and still be able to watch a little bit of Flyers playoff hockey. Because obviously, as it's well known, my dad's a Flyers fan. But one thing that's also very interesting here is that it came out right before the season ended that Rick Tocchet got a little help on tweaking the defense for the Philadelphia Flyers. And that coach that helped him, that friend, is now New York Islanders head coach Pete DeBoer. So one of the criticisms that the Flyers had was that their defense wasn't good enough. And so Tocchet brings in DeBoer as kind of like a consultant type thing, and they fix the defense. And that's one of the reasons also, along with the youth injecting energy into the team, but the fact that they're now playing a better team defense, which also helps with winning games. And I think that, is a great thing to have had happen to the Flyers, is the ability to take advantage of somebody who wasn't hired or who wasn't on another team coaching, being able to come in and kind of consult and help fix certain issues to their game. So, and it'll be nice to see like how some of that translate into the playoffs against the Penguins, who again are still a much more experienced team, has a better edge. But let's see how the Flyers apply some of those lessons that they took going into this playoff run, into the playoffs itself.
Yep, it'll be a like I said, it'll be a pretty nasty series. But like I said, I think we're getting back to like playoff inexperience versus playoff experience. Even like I was saying, even though the Penguins haven't had a lot of success the last few years, and plus you don't have Tristan Jarry anymore. I mean,
Yes, Stuart
Jarry was
Skinner.
probably yeah. I mean, the problem was the last few years that Jarry has never come up big in the playoffs. I mean, I remember a playoff series against the Islanders a couple of years ago. He was essentially the Islanders MVP because he was so unclutch in the net. So I think addition by subtraction is probably good for Pittsburgh.
And I think Oilers have like what, 2 or 3 more years of him too, I believe. So, and then of course, Stuart Skinner, I believe, is a free agent at the end of this season. So, but at least Skinner, has been to the Cup final and can, bring that goaltending edge that, may be over Dan Vladar of the Flyers. So,
And Dan Muse has been smart. He's been limiting the chances that the goaltending has faced. I think, under Mike Sullivan, the Penguins were a lot more wide open than they've been. I think they're a lot smarter with the puck in their own end. They don't take the unnecessary risks that Sullivan's team necessarily did, and that helps a goalie like Skinner.
yeah. So with that is the rest of the first round. We'll be bringing Turo Masamune back so we can do our predictions. And we are back, and we have Turo back with us as well, as we are now doing the predictions for the first round. We're
Yes.
going to start off in the East with the Ottawa Senators and the Carolina Hurricanes. Starkey, I'm going to start with you. Who do you got in Carolina, Ottawa?
I'll go for the upset. I'll say Ottawa in 7.
Odd and seven. All right. And then Toro, what about you, man?
I'm going to stick with the Hurricanes. I'm going to go with that.
And how many games?
Oh, we have to do games. I'll go with seven. Yeah. I'll stick with seven.
7. So Carolina
Yeah,
7,
I'm
Ottawa
not as
7.
good with the games, so.
So, when I look at this, I definitely think this is going to be a battle. But I just feel like Carolina, while they were still dominant in the Metro Division, it was in a much weaker Metro Division. And they also, in my way, and Ted, you and I talked about how we felt like they took a step back over the off season coming into this season by letting some key pieces walk away. And with goaltending always being a question, like, is Frederik Andersen going to be healthy enough to be in the playoffs? Because it seems like every time in the playoffs he gets injured. I'm going to go with both. I know both of you went with 7 games. I'm going with Ottawa in 6
Okay.
for that one.
That's impressive.
I just think Linus Ullmark is going to try to, shed that little bit of reputation that he has of the past playoff failures of the last couple of years with Boston and Ottawa and really step it up. I think that will probably be the big X factor right there is Ullmark. Next up, this one I'm honestly, as I mentioned earlier, I'm excited for this series. Pittsburgh Penguins versus the Philadelphia Flyers, the Battle of Pennsylvania. Tora, we'll start with you on this one.
I'm gonna go with the Penguins, because just to, vengeance for my homies here, and I don't have that little run at the end, but sometimes I'm gonna stick with the Penguins. Jeez, I'll be honest. I mean, I'm so such a wimp. I'll probably say seven on all everything, so I'll stick with seven on this. But Edmonton and four. No.
Starkey, what do you say for Pittsburgh and Philly?
I think Pittsburgh has the edge. I think I would probably take them in six.
Six. Okay. I am actually going to say I'm going Philly because Dan Muse doesn't have
Wow.
the playoff experience as a coach. I mean, yes, he will have Crosby, Malkin, Letang and Carlson. But I think Tocchet in the excitement, because again, this is a team that did something that the Capitals should have done, which was inject the youth, and that which they did throughout the season, and it paid those dividends for the Flyers. So I'm going with the ballsy pick. I'm going the Flyers in seven.
Wow.
Yeah, I got gutsy on that one. Moving over into the Atlantic Division, we have the Montreal Canadiens versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. Starkey, what do you think about this one predictions wise?
I think Tampa Bay in six. I think Tampa is probably my favorite out of the East.
All right, and Toro, what is your thoughts on the Montreal Tampa Bay?
I mean, I would, just on an emotional level, I'd love if the Canadians just pulled it out. But I will probably go with the Lightning.
How many games?
Again, I'm going to go with the ballsy prediction of seven. Yeah,
One series.
eight. I'm going to say
Tampa.
Tampa eight. No, but I would love. I would be happy that I lost the bracket, but I would be happy if the Canadians won.
All right.
So emotionally, I'd be happy, but I think it's gonna be Tampa.
I agree with Starkey with Tampa's probably the best team coming out of the East, probably next to Buffalo, in my opinion. I'm going with Tampa in six as well over Montreal. Like, Montreal has something. I just don't think they're there
Yep,
just
I agree. No, I
yet.
agree. I
Like,
agree. I
Montreal
agree.
definitely has something. Which then brings us to Buffalo versus Boston, the return of the Sabres to the playoffs versus the Bruins, who are under first-year head coach Marco Sturm. Toro, what do you say for this? And I swear to God, if you say seven, I'm just kidding.
Well, and I don't know, I'm very wary of people who have been in the playoffs for a while, because I do believe now. I mean, I've not even been remotely close to any sort of high level hockey or anything, but I kind of have to believe that experience does matter in playoffs. And even if you have the, so I'm gonna go with Boston just because. I've been following the team close enough, the Sabres. I know they're good. I know they're excellent. But there's part of me thinking that, you walk in there, it just seems like a different animal, and it just seems like if you're not ready for it, it's going to be a disadvantage. So I'm going to go with Boston. You know what? Was going to say five, but I'll say six.
There you go.
I was going to say five, but that's, I think Sabres are pretty good. But I just kind of feel like somehow that playoff experience is going to bite them in the butt, or
Starkey,
lack thereof. Sorry.
what is your thoughts?
I mean, I think the big question for me in this series is how Jeremy Swayman does. I think the Sabres have been a great story. They kind of play a style that may not necessarily be great for the playoffs, but I also think they probably can get by Boston. I think it's going to be a very tight series for them, and I think they will do just enough to get by. I'll say seven. I won't say eight or nine. I'll say seven. So,
Also Buffalo in seven.
Buffalo in seven.
I've really liked how Buffalo has been playing since Jaromir Kekäläinen has taken over as general manager. He put the fear of God into these guys. I'm going with Buff in I want to say Buffalo in six. I think Buffalo gets past Boston in this one. Next up, out west.
Oof.
Dallas in their 1999 jerseys versus the Minnesota Wild in not their 25th anniversary retro jerseys. Starkey, how you feeling about Dallas, Minnesota?
I mean, I think obviously Minnesota is probably the team that got the worst luck in the playoffs, having to face Dallas in the first round. Dallas, I think other than Colorado, they're probably the toughest potential out just because of their goaltending. I like obviously what Minnesota did in the offseason, but Dallas, if Jake Ottinger is on, it's going to be a really tough series for Minnesota to win. I'll say Dallas in six.
Alrighty, and Toro, what are you thinking for Dallas, Minnesota?
Yeah, I was happy to see them matched up. I was quite happy with that matchup. But I like the way Minnesota plays. I'm with you in Ottinger. It's going to be I'm going to say Minnesota in seven, but it's actually an honest seven. It's not just because I'm being a wimp. It was a well analyzed seven.
We got him away. We got him away for the seven for at least one series so far. I like both teams. But I do feel Dallas is going to take this one, and I'm agreeing with Starkey. I think it's going to be Dallas in six as well. And I kind of want to see the 99s make it all the way to the Cup final because that would be really cool to see the like imagine a perfect world. The Dallas Stars bring back the 99 jerseys as an alternate this season. They immediately bring them back for the playoffs, and then it's Buffalo Dallas in the Stanley Cup final.
Will the guy be in the crease? There
I don't know. We got to get Brett. We got to see if Brett Hull's allowed to play.
you
So, with that, we're hopping over into Los Angeles versus Colorado. This is obviously I'm just gonna do my prediction first on this one. I think Colorado is gonna get this in five. I just think Colorado is just such a well-oiled machine, and nothing against LA. Getting to the playoffs for Kopitar's last season is great and everything. It's just Colorado is just another animal, you know, that I don't think LA can just overcome. Starkey, what are your thoughts on Colorado, Los Angeles?
Well, like I was saying earlier, I think Colorado is probably the team out of the West. The only question I have, if they play a team that can exploit that goaltending, I don't think the Woods may not be quite good enough to get into the Stanley Cup. But, you know, obviously they proved it wrong in 20, you know, with Kemper a couple of years ago. But Los Angeles probably wins one because of Kopitar. But I think it's Colorado in five.
All right. And Toru Masamune, my good friend, what do you say for Colorado versus
Yeah,
LA?
I'm going with the Colorado in five. I mean, good for the Kings and good for the Kings, man. But also good luck, man.
And
You
now that
know,
Toru has said this, good luck on the streets of LA.
yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, you know, that's right. I sometimes I'm not thinking during these things. But no, I did say good for the Kings, though, right?
Yes,
And,
you did.
yeah. So. The Kings in eight. No, the
King,
Kings
Kings in eight.
in eight.
So Toro, we're going right back to you. We got the Oilers versus the Ducks. I'm already going to put you down for Edmonton. Just how many games?
You know, it's going to be tighter, but you know, I might be a little more adventurous than I say Oilers in five. So I mean it's I kind of half don't believe myself when I say that, but I might I think just because they took care of the defense, Anaheim didn't, and they're gonna maybe come in with the same game plan, and Oilers will score, they'll just score the same amount of goals, and Anaheim will just score fewer, and they'll win some more games.
So with
This is
that,
my feeling.
Starkey, what are your thoughts on Edmonton Anaheim?
I think, I think the Oilers are just a team. They know when to turn it on. I think they can probably overwhelm the Ducks at times. Obviously the Ducks are a well-coached team. They're a good team, but like we're talking about teams that make the playoffs in the first year, they sometimes find a lot of bumps in the road, and you kind of have to learn how to win before you win. So I would say Oilers in six.
Six. All righty. And I'm actually also going with Edmonton in six. I think those two wins that they'll get will be out of that coaching edge that we talked about much earlier in the show, with Quinville and Knobloch. I think Quinville will be able to will them into two wins
True,
against the Oilers.
true, true.
I
Yeah,
can see that
I agree.
happening, but I see
I can see
Edmonton winning this series in six. Which brings us to our last series, which is the Utah Mammoth making their NHL playoffs debut against the Vegas Golden Knights. Starkey, who do you have in this one?
that. I think obviously Vegas is playing a lot better with Tortorella behind the bench. Goaltending is probably their weakest issue, but I don't think Utah is a team to exploit it. So I'll say Vegas in six.
Six. All right. And Toro, what do you have between Vegas and Utah?
Yeah, I mean, definitely Vegas. Yeah, I don't, I mean, wouldn't have said that several weeks ago, but coaching makes a difference, obviously. So I'm gonna say Vegas and six. I mean, Mammoth are great, but they're beatable for sure, you know.
Yeah, I'm going with, I definitely agree with Starkey with the fact about the goaltending, the fact that they've been essentially trying to go for three goaltenders and not really get the consistency truly out of their goaltending. It's like truly relying on a defense. Tortorella, obviously, a big factor in turning that part around. I'm going with Vegas in six as well, because I think Vegas or Utah will sneak two games past the Golden Knights. So with that, just a quick rundown of the entire first round. I have Ottawa, Philly, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Dallas, Colorado, Edmonton, and Vegas. Starkey has Ottawa, Pittsburgh, Philly, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Dallas, Colorado, Edmonton, and Vegas. And Toru has the Hurricanes, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, Boston, Minnesota, Colorado, Edmonton, and Vegas. So, in all reality, one, two, three, four. I break from you guys on one series, which is Philly. And Tori, you break away from everybody on three series, which
Okay.
is Boston, Minnesota, and Carolina.
Yeah, and
So.
those
We'll
right.
see how the I mean
Is
last time I did picks last year, I was like the worst person at picking predictions. So
And you know, it's so true, right? I mean, less so in the first round, but anything can happen in the playoffs. I mean, really.
just
You know,
gotta
even
get
though
hot for
it's
you gotta get hot for a
yeah.
week. That's it.
Just gotta get hot for four games.
That's exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
and so with that, I have to ask you this, Toro, because it's obviously a hot topic, and Starkey, I'll ask this to you as well. Playoff format, is it finally time to go back to 1v8? Like the 1v8 format, 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, 4-5.
Oh, you're talking about the
The
format.
standings, yeah, the playoff format, because.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Interesting.
As much
So
as
you're
I
talking about
like,
like
yeah, like instead of like Colorado or instead of Dallas playing Minnesota right away, it could
Yeah.
be, maybe they meet up in the conference final instead of the first round, and you're losing a,
Well,
a
I think the
power.
likeliness of having those powerhouse finals are greater, certainly. So I guess maybe it's good that way. I mean, I'm just happy the Wild are playing Dallas. So it's hard for me to, at this point, I'm a little biased. But so I'm not ready this season, put it that way, but I hear you. I hear you.
Starkey.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of the one versus 16, but that's never happening. So, I wrote today on Hot Stove about the playoff format, and it basically took the worst of the old divisional format and the worst of the conference format, and makes no one happy. But I mean, you look at the teams, it's funny because we have different teams in the playoffs this year, and so you have new complaints about the playoff format. But Washington had Pittsburgh in their division, Toronto had Florida and Tampa Bay in their division, and nothing changed. So unfortunately, probably the next change they do to the format will be a play-in format, which I'm not a fan of.
Nobody's a
But
fan of that.
yeah, but the NBA uses it, and I think sooner than later the NHL is gonna say, hey, we can get more playoff revenue for a couple more teams. So you'll probably see, 20 teams make the playoffs instead of 16, and
Oh, that's what that's all about. Okay,
yeah, you
gotcha.
basically have the 7 versus 10 and 8 versus 9, and the winners go in. And yeah, it's NBA uses it, and I'm sure they like it because it's extra money. And I would think at some
I don't think it's
point,
wise to follow the NBA on any format, quite frankly. I
I
mean,
agree.
right?
Yeah, but they want playoff rev. They want playoff revenue.
Luckily, the one thing that we can all agree with Bettman, like we all disagree with Bettman on, no, the playoff format is broken, sir. We need it to be 1v8 again. But the one thing that I will agree with him on is that he is a big opponent to the play-in. Because
But he's beholden. He
Elliot
is
Friedman.
beholden to the owners, though. I mean, the thing about Gary is he makes his owners happy, and he will change his desires to whatever the owners want.
Oh,
But
and also with the oh, go ahead.
the thing is, though, is that Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet and 32 Thoughts is a big champion of the play-in, to which several owners have told him, it ain't happening, Elliot. Stop bringing it up.
Well, we'll see. As I said, it's the you got to remember, playoff revenue is not shared with the players. So any extra home games you have that are in playoff, quote unquote playoff format, goes directly to the owners. And that's why, we were talking earlier about, with the Caps and John Carlson, if you miss the playoffs, you forfeit $5 million. Even if you have one or two home games, you're probably get $3 million out of the deal. And that's eventually money talks. And I think that's the format they're gonna, especially when, the next couple of years the NHL is gonna go to 34 teams, probably see Houston and Atlanta come back. And at that point, you're gonna have more than half the league will not make the playoffs. So I think they like the balance where the top half make it and the top half don't. So
Yeah, you're probably
I
going to have it
think
be at 36, to be honest with you, because you're going to want to put a team in each division. So you can't really go to 34. You're going to have to eventually go to 36. And actually, the Players Association poll came out today, and the top four in this very order were what the players would like to see for for not relocation, but for expansion. And in this order, number one, Houston. Number two, Quebec City. Number three, Atlanta. And number four, Scottsdale, Arizona.
Well, if you had Atlanta, though, that's one in the East, and then Houston in the West. That makes it pretty easy.
Yeah, but then the thing is, though, is that the divisions will still be unaligned
Yeah,
or
but you said,
uneven.
but if
And
you're,
so you move Quebec into the division that, say,
oh,
like,
Quebec is never getting another team. I mean, I would love to
well,
see it.
as long as Bettman's commissioner, they're never going to get another team.
No, I mean, they're not. It's too small a market. It's the same thing as Hartford. I mean, it's great. It's romantic, but I mean, the market is tiny. It's smaller than Winnipeg in terms of market size, and it just, the next two teams are going to be Houston and Atlanta. And if Arizona ever gets its act together, which is basically if the Suns ownership decides, the whole problem with the Coyotes is the Suns didn't want the Coyotes in their arena, so they were kind of nomadic. And I think that'll be and the next team whenever, but Houston and Atlanta are probably coming in the next 5 years. And like you'll said, eventually you might see top 10 in each conference make the playoffs. Bottom four are in the play-in. And it's just, obviously they had uneven divisions for years before Seattle and Vegas. And they'll probably go on with it for a couple more years.
So with that, Toru, it's great to have you back, buddy.
Yeah,
But
no, it's good to be back.
I've missed having you on the show, man. So with that, where can the people find you on social media, and what projects can you talk about?
Well, social media, I think it seems to be the Instagram is how I communicate with those people, and I am kind of posting anything that's coming up is at my name, Toru Masamune. And Yeah, that probably on Instagram. That seems to be the best communication tool. And then, oh, and by the way, I don't know about you, Mike, but I'm gonna be at Paramorphicon this summer. Just ran into Scott, so you can be there.
We'll
Maybe.
talk about that off air.
We'll take talk and talk about
We'll talk about
that.
off air. But in August, you can meet Toru Masamune.
Yeah,
He'll
but
have
yeah,
him in
you can even edit
California
that.
at
You
Paramorphicon.
can even
But
edit that out. But yeah, I'll be at Paramorphicon, and I got a few some other shows coming up. Just check my Instagram. I got a few of them coming up in the shorter term. Yeah, working on a few projects, but they're kind of everything's
NDA still. We
NDA-ish right now. And
understand that.
yeah. So, but yeah, that's those are probably that's my news, I think. Yeah.
All right, and Starkey, where can the people find you on social media?
Mostly Twitter at Ted Starkey. Also at Hockey Hot Stove, doing columns through the summer. We'll see which what how the playoffs go, but those are the two main spots to find me.
All right, and then of course for me, it's at the Lindenbaum 75 on for finding me personally, and then also I gotta plug it. I'm playing semi-professional ball hockey in the National Ball Hockey League, Tier 3 Maryland Division for the Delmarva Llamas. Oh yeah,
Really?
yes. So Toru, I'll have to send you what our uniforms look like. You will love it.
Okay, that's amazing.
And
Congratulations.
so follow. You could follow the team on Instagram at Delmarva Llamas, and on
Wow.
Facebook, just look up the Delmarva Llamas. We play in the National Ball Hockey League, Tier 3 Maryland Division out of Rockville, Maryland. We've already played our first two games. They didn't go so well for us. I'll tell you more about that off air as well, Toru. But our next games are actually May 2nd. And yeah, so feel
Oh, I
free
did
to.
have one more thing to plug if I can. I just
Oh,
thought
yeah,
of
go
something.
for it because we're talking hockey. Go for it.
Because since we're plugging away here, here's my new spaghetti sauce. No, here, I'll be doing a celebrity golf tournament at Bermuda Dunes Country Club on May 3rd, and it's for the VIM. It's for the only free clinic in the Coachella Valley area. So you can go on. Yeah, I guess you can VIM. I think I probably should be more prepared, but Bermuda Dunes Country Club, and I don't know if there's a, yeah, I think you can attend or certainly donate. It's a great cause. It's the only free clinic in Coachella Valley, so that's on the May 2nd.
All right, and then yeah, you go to Toru's Instagram. He'll have more information on
Yeah,
that as
all that's
well.
on the Instagram.
And
Yeah.
then, of course, you could follow the show TXHT Hockey at TXHT underscore hockey on all social media platforms, and of course TXHTHockey.com for the dailies and everything else that Dixon and I are doing throughout the playoffs. So with that, gentlemen, this was a pleasure. And until next time, we will see you on the ice.